So I'm Anita. Anita Helm is Coach Tyner just said, I'm going to try to give you a little overview about my background really quickly. It's a double nickels because both of us are 55. I didn't want him to call me out and tell you, but I'll tell you myself. So I started out in Leesburg, Virginia, Loudoun County. Born to two parents, of course. One parent died at 10, big blow of my life. Raised by a widowed mother. Not the same as a single, but still it's a single mother. Didn't really have a lot of male influence, even though I have a older brother that's 10 years older than me. He was gone to BMI. I was back at home, dealing in the country, one lane to my house, walking back and forth, learning about grief without any counseling. Had an eighth grade boyfriend. I was in eighth grade, he was in ninth grade. Mother had already had two of my sisters get pregnant at 16 and 17, so she had me at 67, and then she had two granddaughters at 68. Not a great combination, but that's what happened. So when it's my time to have a boyfriend, I'm on lockdown. I could barely get a first French kiss, no less anything else. So mom had me shut out. Went all the way through high school, very active in high school, but no boyfriend at the end. That eighth grade was it. I was in a drought until I was a junior in college. All that time, I'm thinking, you know, I'm a pretty nice girl, pretty cute, cheerleader, basketball. You don't have to laugh. You agree, right? Yeah. I was like, what's going on with me? I had that self-doubt. What is happening with me that I don't have somebody approach me and say, hey, would you like to go out? Would you like to go to movies? Nothing. So when I had my first experience where I went out, I think we were at the Christmas break my junior year, my cousins who were fun, having boyfriends, doing all kinds of stuff. I was the church girl because I was a Christian at that point. That's probably why I didn't get a lot of boyfriends, because I was probably not going to give it up like they thought. So this Christmas time, we ended up going out, and it was for a club for 21 years old. I'm 19. Lie, get into club. Older guy asked me out. Listen to this line that I got caught with. I was so naive. We're dancing, slow dancing, and he says, can I taste your lipstick? I wasn't ready for that line. I said, yeah. And I was kissing on the dance floor. My cousins are looking at me saying, what is she doing? I'm making out with a guy I just met. Fast forward, junior year becomes senior year, and we're dating. I thought we were in a monogamous relationship. I'm at college. He's at wherever he is, and that wasn't the case. You play around a little bit. For me, I was trying to save it. I tried, but once you compromise and you play too much, things happen. I lost my virginity. So here I am, this Christian girl, and I'm thinking, what am I going to tell the next guy? If I use a Christian, he's dating me, and I'm supposed to be loving the Lord, and I've already lost my virginity. And guess what? To top it off, this is me being open. Something's not right. I just feel like I know my body. Something's not right. Guess what I got on my first experience? An STD that I've got to declare every time I go to a medical appointment for the rest of my life. It's a treatable one, praise God. So one of us wasn't being faithful, right? You think I would have left him? No, I was glammed like a vampire. You know, we loved each other. He's going to ask for forgiveness like you guys do. And I'm so naive and dumb. That's what y'all are thinking. True, but I thought I was smart. He loves me, all this stuff is going on. I saw red flags. Well, red flags in any relationship don't get better without dealing with them. So in my case, I found that he said he loved me, gave me the ring. I was getting ready to say, it's over, it's done. Guess what he does? Thanksgiving, both of our families come together. Gets on his knee, will you marry me? I'm getting ready to dump this sucker. Sure. What? I'm feeling pressure. You got your parents there. My family's there. Everybody's like, oh, this is so wonderful. I'm like, you don't know. I just caught him cheating. You don't know. But I'm hiding everything because I'm student body president. I'm really protecting myself because it's going to make me look really bad that I've done such a bad judgment in picking. But here, I had this belief, like many of you may have, that once you graduate senior year, you're supposed to have everything ready for the American dream. Have your job set up. Have the girl that you're in love with for the rest of your life. Figure out everything that you got going on with your student debt. You just got to have it figured out. That's not true, guys. It's not. But I believed I had it. So I was in a drought. So this guy, he was the only prospect. So I settled. I actually married him, knowing that it probably, I said, maybe I can work this out. Maybe I can work it out. Maybe I'm smart. You know, I'm 19, getting ready to turn 20. I graduate from college with an undergraduate degree in psychology. Come on now. Can you make this stuff up? Psychology and speech. I'm getting to use the psychology now because I really wasn't using it then. But in this case, we're married. Things don't get better because you're married. I'll give you that hint now. The reason why I even started this, because I wished I could have informed my 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 self with some things I learned at 40 and 30. And so I started a business too last year. Look at us. I started last year. I've been teaching for 20 some years, but I decided to formalize after my husband died. Matt gave away the punchline of my second relationship. He's dead. Sorry about that. That's not being crude. I don't mean to be crude. But I was going to tell you that in a little softer way, but since he said it, y'all can, you know, it hurt like crap. It still does. But in the case of the marriage, so we're married. Shaky, but it got better to the point that we had a baby. But then it got bizarre after the baby was born. I got married at 20, turned 21 that July, got married in June, 1 month out of college, graduation. And people said to me, I wouldn't do that. I'd wait. But I'm 20. I'm smart. I know myself. I can handle this. What are you going to tell me? I love him. I can make this work. They didn't even know the stuff that I had done. They didn't know anything about the sex or the STDs or the drama. And I mean drama. TNT type of drama. So anyway, we have marriage. Baby comes. Bizarre behavior. Psychology that I was remembering said, what's up with you? He admits he's started crack cocaine. That's hard. What you learn in psychology is that there's a few of them that's really tough to kick, and he wasn't wanting to kick me. And 7 rehabs later, bank accounts empty, credit report shot, distrust. Who wants to go to bed with somebody if you're not even sure if they're, you know, you don't want to get catch something else. So I got smarter and said, Anita, you can do better than this. With a baby in tow, $3 in my checking account, I went home to Loudoun County, back to my mother, who is 93 years old, praise the Lord. So went back to her, tried to work it out, all that kind of stuff. It didn't work out. I did the divorce. I was about late 20s when the divorce finally, on paper, got signed off by the judge decree. But then, in the midst of that chaos, I met this new preacher at my mom's church. Nice guy. I was not looking for a guy. I needed to regroup and figure out what's going on with Anita. So we became friends. I was his, what he called an armor bearer in the Baptist church. An armor bearer is somebody that helps the pastor out. In this case, I was helping him not. He had a temper. And he was mellowed out by that point, but he wanted to really fire some deacons. And I said, he showed me the letter that he was going to read over the pulpit. And I said, Reverend Helm, I don't think I'd say it like that. I tone it down. And he wanted to fire my mother as a treasurer. They didn't have a good relationship in the first part of our marriage. Anyway, but the long story short of it is we were friends until it changed. And guess what? Guess what the burning question was from my husband, who was my friend, changed over. I'm on the pulpit doing something with books. And he says, Anita, can you cook? I was like, what? And I said, he likey. I realized what was going on then. But long, we were friends. We got married. Didn't invite anybody. Eloped. Had the witnesses. We went to Missouri. And got married. And like Coach Tyner said, he had an illness. He had a stroke first. And then he had 3 different illnesses that were chronic enough to kill him. Chronic to terminal. And that's a lot. I mean, in that time, I was probably only, when he got the stroke, in my 40s. So we went through a lot. But I tell you all that to say that I'm full circle with the death. I was single back then at 19 and 20 years old, but now I find myself a widow and single. I am informing all those 55 years in what I want to do for the next chapter of a relationship. I'm not going to be taken as naive as I was when I was 19 or 20. Not because I was not smart, because all of you are smart. But the things that I didn't know and invest in myself to get to know sabotaged a lot of years, gave me a lot of pain and suffering that I had to get over. I had to work through. And praise God that I had the opportunity to have faith in God, because for a while, when you're on the wrong path, you don't really want to talk to God because you think, man, I have screwed up. I knew better than this. And God said, I knew. Come on back. Come on back. But here's the thing. I want to tell you some myths about relationships, because we're going to talk about a lot of them. I got to look at my clock. The first myth I want to talk to you about is that there is no perfect woman out there. I don't care how beautiful she is. I don't care if you found her and you're living with her, or you've dated her for years, or you've already said, I want to marry her. There is not going to be any perfect woman. There was a perfect Christ, but that's it. You men are not perfect, and we women certainly aren't perfect. Second myth, there's no perfect relationship. I don't care if you've seen your mom, your dad, grandpa, your neighbors, your coaches, your teachers. Everybody can have good behaviors and fellowship and love and all that kind of stuff, but nobody's perfect. Everybody is a work in progress, to include those people that you really admire. And guess what? Those of you that have parents and it's not going well, and you know it's not going well, and they're kind of putting on, they're in the cold roommate phase, just trying to get you through college, and they're going to call it quits, or they've already called it quits. They didn't take advantage of some things I'm going to tell you today that's going to help you make better decisions, I hope. The other part that I want to say is a myth. People can't read your mind. God can read your mind, but nobody else can. That girl that you may fall in love with, if you don't tell her that you feel like a suck today, she's not going to know. Even though she should read your mind, and not that you feel like a suck today, you know, I'm just saying in general.
Take it, Max.
Take it. I know you're doing great. They won't know because you got all this stuff in your head. And the people that will say today, another myth, and I'll go on, that they are life coaches, they're relationship experts, relationship coaches, whatever the titles are, I'm Anita and I'm sharing you my experiences. I'm telling you the truth of what I have happened in my years. Nobody is an expert to know all things. Again, this is a theme. Who knows everything? God. Relationship coaches don't know it. You can get charged $300 an hour to be told some good stuff to help you process some things, the same as any mental health professional. They can help, but nobody is going to be a mind reader and going to know everything. All right, now, many of you don't realize that the one relationship that is the most important in your lives from now until you go to the grave that you need to foster is the relationship of number one, yourself. Now, as your coach said, I believe that having a relationship with God is going to help that relationship, but you have to know the core of who you are. And a lot of people tend to be self-marketing. I want you to think of who I am. I want you to think I've got it all together. I want you to think I'm tough and I'm strong and I've got a mental game and I got a physical game and I got all these answers and I got a great girl. That's your self-promotion. But in the mirror, when nobody is looking and how you feel on the inside, that's the part of the relationship I want you to start focusing on. Because many of us, and I didn't realize until I was preparing for this talk, I'm 55 and I haven't, the first time I've lived on my own with no parents, no roommate, dorm mate, child, husband, relationship has been 2021 to now. Went from house or a parent to a house with a husband or a roommate and then to another husband or with a kid. Take the time now. Don't be so in a rush to say, I got to go get my person. If you don't have your person, it's okay. You've got time. Put a pin in that balloon of pressure that's on your shoulders about you got to have it all figured out. You are not going to have everything figured out at graduation. All of us, we will have a job, and guess what? That first job may not be the right job for you. That woman that you find that you are glammed, and I'm using that word glam because somehow when you find her, when that sex is so good, you can't think right. But in reality, you may be in love with the sex, not the girl. Because when you see some of these women that you see that are so wonderful, you find that you are having a relationship with the package of the wrapping and the bow, and you're not getting to see what is inside that present. What is the substance of the woman? She got a great body, but I can tell you, the porn hubs and the browsers and all those places, double D's, triple D's, G's don't stay up like that. That is silicone and cosmetic surgery. It doesn't last and it's not real. But if you want to believe it, you can believe it. I got the real ones and they don't stay up there on the shelf. That's just reality without a lot of help, okay? So the reality is there are things that my husband and I, he was a pastor. He's not the typical pastor. That career that I never saw the bod, and I always say that, never saw the bod, but I heard about the bod and Coach and other people send me pictures of the bod, but I never got the bod. I got the man that was whole. And what I want to tell you is that every time we would counsel people, because people come to a preacher when the ship is sinking, when you don't want to be in partnership with your spouse, when you don't want to talk to them, when you're fighting all the time, where things are not going right, they want to come to the preacher because they want help. And preachers and counselors are great listeners. They don't fix everything. You have to do the work. Just like you all practice baseball, you have to continually practice and be engaged in your relationships, whether it's with your brothers and sisters, your coaches, your teammates, your mom and dad. Give them a break. It is not easy trying to be the person that is trying to make good citizens and good fathers and mothers and sons. Everybody is learning. We're all a work in progress. But here's the thing. Five pillars is what we learned when we started to see everybody coming to us having problems. And I'm going to use a visual of a house. Imagine that first relationship with yourself is the foundation. But the support beams, I'm going to call pillars, and there are five of them. I'm going to talk about them really quickly because of time. The first one is communications, and I'm going to ask you to just wait because I'm going to tell you that's the first, but I'm going to talk about it last because everything else of the four pillars are going to have to do with that communication. So the second pillar is cultural upbringing. How you were raised, whether you were raised by a single parent, two parents, divorced parents, grandparents, adopted parents, whoever raised you took that investment of time to pour into you. How you were raised affects everything about you, whether you want it to or not. Whether you want to say, I will never be like my father, I'll never hurt my mom, I'll never put my hands on her, I'll never do the stuff I saw him do. I just will never. That repels you. That informs you. Or you see somebody has a wonderful relationship. I like the way they talk together. I like the way that they're always together. They seem like they're really cool. Cultural upbringing. I'm black. If I marry a man that's from India, his culture is going to inform our relationship. My culture is going to inform his. If one is a Christian, one is a Hindu, one is a Muslim, all those cultural backgrounds, how are you going to raise the kids? Do you believe in discipline where I can beat their, or no, we're going to do time out. We're going to do everything Dr. Spock. How do you believe about money? How do you believe about all the things in your family? But guess what? You're going to start judging your accomplishments and looking for self-validation from what you learn from your family and all of your culture. When you get that house, I'm going to show mom. I got two bedroom, four bedroom, two car garage, because I want to show them I'm doing good. They did good. You want to have them be proud of you, mom or dad or grandparents. And that's part of your cultural upbringing. And when people don't discuss that and they fall into stuff and they don't know how to communicate, which we're going to talk about, that's the first pillar is communication. Second pillar is cultural upbringing. The third pillar is faith. Some people have a faith, which is a relationship. Other people have a religion, which is legalistic. You shall not. And if you don't know what's going on when your girl doesn't want to have sex because she believes that it's against the principles that she believes in, you don't get it. But you have to talk through those things. Does one believe in afterlife? Does one believe in heaven, hell? You believe in scripture? You believe in giving to God? Do you even believe there's a God? But yet you're going to come before in that beautiful tuxedo of yours, and she's going to look great in her gown. You're going to say, do vows before God. If you don't even know who God is, what is a vow to him? You know that it sounds good. Everybody does it. But if you don't have a faith, what does that mean? So faith is important as a third pillar. The fourth pillar is finances. And people assume that you're going to break up because of money. Do not get married. I don't do very many do nots. Check your credit report of your potential spouse. You get ready to say I do, and you don't even know she has bad credit. You don't even know if she likes to save. Does she even understand about money? Yeah, she puts clothes on, but you don't know that she's maxed out her credit cards, or she gets mom and dad's money to pay for everything. You all talk at the high level if you're living together. Oh, you got some money for us to go grocery shopping? Oh, you got some money so we can pay rent? That's high level. You got to talk about things that are long and short term about money, because people get upset about money. And you ever seen a divorce? That's mine. I did it. You're not getting my money. You're not, because all of a sudden the fangs come out. And what used to be or should have been his and hers together was really never that. This was my money. That's why I have my secret bank account here. And we have the family bank account here. But I got all this side money and these side assets, because people choose not to communicate their expectations on a lot of different things, whether it's their faith, whether it's their finances. Is it our finances? Now, the last one is physical sex. You all hear so much about sex. Marriage with great sex is wonderful. I'm going to put that so you all hear it, right? But there's more to a marriage or a relationship than sex. Because really, you know, the reality is you can have the explanation point without having a partner. We can have an explanation point without having a partner. So it's not only about, do you want endorphins and want to have ecstasy? You have to think about, do you want intimacy with a woman? And I've heard men on movies and people say, oh, I cheated on her, but it was just sex. No, that's a reflection of your number one relationship. Your integrity, your character, who you are, that you're willing to just jump in the bed and have legs between you just because that's what you can do. There's a lot of things you can do, but is it right to do? And I'm not talking religion, but religion is a factor. Faith is a factor. Who are you? If you don't care about the person you're with, and if that young woman doesn't care enough and all she can do is have sex, you don't want to be part of that. You can. Like I said, you're big and bad to do anything you want. But building body count, you're actually building it on yourself. And that person that is going to look in the mirror is going to one day say, that's not who I want to be. And some of you have the integrity now to say, I want better for myself than to do that. And other people say, oh man, I can't believe you haven't had 70. You are not at the count. This, don't listen to them. They're still growing. And I'm not insulting you, but they are still growing. I'm going to give you another visual. This visual is about a boxing match. Imagine a boxer having a corner. And the corner has a cut man, a manager, a person to give them water, make them refresh. In your relationship, in relationships you will have, you may be in the first or second round of your lives here in your 20s. And they're asking you, or you're asking yourself, to make decisions for the 15th round. And you don't really know life, but that's your opponent at this point. You've had a few uppercuts, body blows, but there are more to come. And you're going to your corner to get support. The person that I'm referencing as your corner is that spouse, that girlfriend, that partner for you. You've only gone two rounds of your life, but you think you know everything about that match, and you really don't. And nobody is insulting anything about your intellect. Nothing. I respect you all, but I'm saying we're asking people in their 20s to make decisions for when they're going to be in the 9th, 10th, 12th round of their lives. And it's kind of unfair. But it's the way that we set up this thing. And that's why we wonder why we're almost at 50% divorce rates. What you are now will not be what you are going to be in 10 years, no less 30 years. But you're being said, find her, make her one. But here's the thing about the corner, and you may not understand this from your parents at this point. A lot of men and women go to their houses and they can't stand to open the door because they have fought with the world, the American dream, the job, the expectations. And they want to come home to a supportive corner. When they walk into the door, that spouse on the other side, they're bobbing and weaving because they're pissed off. They don't really like you, that you disappointed them. They had expectations of how their life's going to be. You're not measuring up. The kids are getting on the nerves. All this stuff is going on. Where do you rest? You're fighting the world. You're fighting inside the house. And then it's like, I don't know where to go. Now we're going to talk about communication, because I'm being sensitive of time and I want to give you all time. Body language, like you guys, arms folded, you know, I'm watching all of this, is a communication. You need to learn about your lady's communication. And we work in patterns. I'll give you an example. I have an expression I say to people when I say goodnight on text. Night, night. The time I say night, 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 night. If I say goodnight, I'm pissed. But you don't know I'm pissed. But you should see a pattern. Why would she say, even my husband, I used to kiss him when I left all the time. The one time I was in a rush and didn't kiss him, called him back, you didn't kiss me. He was pissed. I came back, kissed his head, his side, his forehead. I said, I'm sorry. I never thought of it. It wasn't anything that I meant. But he was watching patterns. And that's what you have to think about with your women, a woman. What they say out of their mouth, what they don't say out of their mouth, their language, their, you can see things. You can see. I hope you can learn when your person is pissed. Yeah, you know when your mom is pissed, right? She's a woman. She's not going to give you the same signals as your girl. But anyway, so here's something I learned from my youngest. I had a 21-year-old get ready to graduate April 29th. I paid the last tuition. She said, I'm going to tell you about reflexive listening. And reflective listening is me having a conversation. What's your name?
Louise.
I'm your girlfriend right now. Or I'm your live-in girlfriend. Hi, Louise. I want to tell my mom that I'm not living at the dorm because she's paying the dorm fee. And I feel bad that I'm lying to her. And I'm just scared. Now, stop. Louise could come back. I can't believe you're going to do that. You're going to mess everything up. That's not the response. You have to recognize and reflective listening. Listen to her. Don't cut her off. Appreciate that she's being honest with you to tell you that she's scared. She's afraid that something in her fiber is uncomfortable with lying. Let her know you heard her. Let her know that you're glad she talked to you about it. And then be supportive. You don't have to always be giving her the answer unless she says, what would you do? You know, she gives you an opening to say, what would you do? But then here's the thing, offer to help. Can I be there with you? I'll be there when you get back. Reflective listening is making sure you're hearing, you're seeing the emotion, you're being able to hear your partner. And that's the thing, we always want to have the answer coming back instead of just listening. Just take the time to listen, and it makes a difference in life. Here's another thing about communication, trust. Trusting is not just you telling somebody your inner secrets, the things that are bothering you, because somebody could be disloyal and they could tell your secrets and then you know, don't go back to that person. But here's the thing. If at this age you are at the point where you don't have one or two people in your life that you trust, that you can open up to that real person who you are, I'm going to recommend seriously that you go and get some kind of support, counseling, coaching, because at this stage in your 20s, if your walls are so high that you don't feel that you can open up to anybody to tell them what's going on in your head, it's only going to get more problematic and challenging. And the reason why you're starting to see, and I'm not trying to scare you all, more suicides is because people are trying to do that self-marketing and they can't keep up with it. What's inside is going to come out. Now, how it comes out, it could be an anger, it could be somebody exploding on you, but you need to talk through some things. And that's the reality of all of us. We talk. I have a hairdresser I see every week and she's my greatest person that I talk to. People who would counsel need counseling. But the thing about it is, don't let yourself be in a place that you don't have anybody you could talk to, that you can trust. If you have that place where you can't trust anybody, and the thing about relationships, especially if you see your mom and dad break up, there's a brokenness there. They were your stability and they broke up and it's affecting you. You can look tough and you can do everything, make everybody think that all is well, you got this, but something hurts. And either you're going to lean into that hurt and talk about it and get somebody to help you, or you're going to find out that hurt people hurt people. And that could be somebody that you say you love, but that hurt's coming out. And that person is the closest person to you. Now, I talked to you about mind reading, and I'm going to end this so we can do the questions. People will be near you to have conversations with you and learn your mannerisms and learn how you talk and that stuff. And you've seen how older couples say, oh, they finished each other's sentences. Yes, that's true. That happens. But nobody's able to know what you're thinking until you say it out loud. You have to learn, or we as a family of people need to learn that's more than I love you, I hate you, I'm sad, I'm glad. That's certain things that you learned as descriptions in fifth grade, but you guys went to college, you're going to college. You really have broken me because you hurt me. Your cheating is making me feel like I'm worthless. You have to say words out of your mouth to get to that core part of how these people are making you feel. And if you don't know how to express yourself to the person that you say you love, that means you don't trust them. And people can go and have sex without trust. They can get into relationships and live together without trust. You just are very compatible. You can deal with them for more than up and down of sex. But if you can't trust them,
so I encourage those of you who've taken the time to listen to this excerpt of the Towson University Baseball Life Series to, if you need to, get somebody to provide the support that you need, whether it's a person of faith, a mental professional, whoever you need to get support. The offering for myself is under takelessons.com. Look for life coaching under the health and wellness, and if anyone could be of service to help you, find that support because you definitely are worth it.